So that's what you look like. Anybody who's been in broadcasting, if there are any fellow announcers in the audience, that's something you hear over the years. When you meet people for the first time, they put a face to the voice. And then when they see you, and they say, I thought you were 6 foot, 8 feet tall, 400 pounds, and this and that. The worst, the one that puzzles you is, you look just as I pictured you. And then they don't say anything else. They just, this is me, warts and all. Two things, my wife warned me, begged me, watch your time. I have these little things in my ear. You'll never hear that signal, so give me the big loud, you've got 2 minutes left, or throw something at me. And I'll wrap it up. I grew up in, I was born and raised in Lowell, Massachusetts. Oh, my heavens. Now, this is a mill town in the truest sense of that description. The Merrimack River, which meanders from New Hampshire down through the cities and through Lowell, right in the middle, split the city in half. And in its heyday, it was the textile capital of the United States. All of the raw material from other parts of the country we sent to these mills and turned into beautiful cloth and other fabrics. My own members of my family, I have two elderly aunts who were in their upper 90s, and they were little shop girls in the days prior to child labor laws. But I said that because Lowell, if you were to get off the interstate today and drive through town, you probably wouldn't like it. It's tenement homes that are still there. My school, as a junior high school, was built in 1864. 2 years ago, I visited the school and was invited in, and it hadn't changed. Same rooms. So this kind of, you'd look at it and say, but for me, it was the old hometown. And some notables from Lowell included a very young announcer. I was a class of 1950. In 1940, there was a young whiz kid announcer on local station. His name was Ed McMahon, 17 years old, and he went off to bigger and better things. I was to meet him years later when he was Ed McMahon, and we talked about Lowell, and he put me on a Jack Kerouac, who was a classmate of his from 1940, if you're in the Beat generation. I read a couple of the Kerouac books and meant nothing to me. I mean, I enjoyed them, but I wasn't into that, but. And another announcer was Ray Goulding, who would leave Lowell and went on to Boston and later to New York, and was part of the Bob and Ray comedy team. Then along came moi, Ken Jackson. But there was something that happened in my youth, right around 9, 10, 11 in my home on Sunday mornings. I was very fortunate to live in a nice tree-lined street, nice home, being Lowell. And Sunday mornings were special because my oldest sister, Louise, who I love and miss, played the piano. And on Sundays, the parlor was never used during the week. It was just, some of you may be familiar with that. The rest of the activity was all the other rooms. But Sunday, the parlor became sort of the central focal point. And Lou would play these lovely songs. And as a beginning of World War II youngster, just picking up on this music, I was fascinated by the melodies and by the lyrics and the song titles, and I was getting these pictures in my mind about, as someone put it, I was getting this perception of what it is to be romantic and considerate with women, and I was enjoying songs like All the Things You Are and Where or When and Until We Meet Again. And then one song of all of the songs that Louise played was called Blue Moon, Rodgers and Hart. And it became, as a youngster, my song, and I'd say, Lou, play it again. Please play Blue Moon. And she would play it, and sometimes she would sing, and I was just fascinated with the pictures that it just sort of brought to mind. And I moved on and to high school with these lyrics and these romantic notions, and I started to date, or at least I tried. In high school, I was probably responsible for more women having the cleanest, most beautiful smelling hair in the world. I would call for a date. It's a true story. I would call for a date, and they were always, oh, Ken, I'm washing my hair then. And this was true. And I could call in July for New Year's Eve. Oh, that's the night I wash my hair. So, but I persevered. I graduated in 1950. 2 weeks later, the Korean thing broke out, and I was off and running for 3.5 years in the service. And then I came back, and I decided, well, now this is the time. I'm ready. And I started college at a later age because, again, I was busy and otherwise preoccupied. And when I started college, I still had these romantic notions of what the woman of my life would be like. And I wanted to exercise and put these lyrics and these romantic thoughts to good use. And I was most fortunate in my freshman year. Now, keep in mind, I'm a veteran. I'm 22 and a half years old. And a few others, as myself, were veterans as well. But in French 101, there was this young lady that I spotted one day. And this is true. I said, that's for me. She didn't know it. I asked this young lady, whose name was Ann Campbell, for a date. I was turned down once, and she didn't have to wash her hair, two and three times, because she was drop-dead gorgeous and very popular, and all these guys from Harvard and Yale. I was at Emerson College, by the way, which is a fine school, smaller then than it is certainly now. And after three times, I said, I'm going to try one more time, and I called. And I, in class, I said, would you like to go out? And I wasn't too suave. I mean, I just, you know, I wanted a date, and I just wanted to be with this girl. And she said, yes. I found out later she dumped some guy from Boston College to do this with me. And we went to and this is how exciting and romantic I was. I brought her to my high school football game. Everybody was interested in Lowell High School's football, and here's a girl from Pennsylvania who had, but she showed up and she pretended to enjoy the game, which I thought was exciting. And then we had a real date, and this was going to the movies, and we did. And I showed up at the box office, and I reached into my pocket, and I didn't have a penny in my pocket. I had changed my pants at the moment before leaving home, and everything was packed in my hometown, and she kindly paid for the movie for our first official date. Some wonderful things happened after that, because as we got to know each other, we talked about music, and at last she knew who Rodgers and Hart was, and Irving Berlin, and Hoagy Carmichael, and Johnny Mercer, and I would mention songs, so I love those songs, and I said, wow, and then I said, my song is Blue Moon. She said, oh, I love that song. And we were at a place one evening having a drink, and some guy was on the piano, and I played Joe Cool, and I walked up and said, could you play Blue Moon? And he did. And there was this vibration in the air, and she liked it. And things progressed from there, and then in my junior year, in the telephone booth at Kappa Gamma Chi sorority house on Beacon Street, which was guarded by a house mother who was, nobody went in the second floor of Kappa Gamma Chi. But in the telephone booth, I, with my $100 ring, which I bought on charge, I had 2 years to pay it off at a couple of dollars a week, and I asked this young lady if she would marry me. I had no money. I had no job prospects, but I was in love. And she said yes. And nice things happened after that, and we got married. She left college to support me. One of us had to do it, and I wasn't going to be me, because I was good. Of the 9 children of my family, I was the only one to reach college, because in those Depression days, everybody had other things to do. My brothers went off to World War II. So I was determined to get my degree, and I did, thanks to this young lady. But were some places we would go, and people would recognize it, and they would start playing, and there's nothing more romantic, believe me, to walk into Society Hill when Mel Spears was playing, and he would see us come in, and he would start playing Blue Moon, and he started playing the song. And it just became our song. So this is, in effect, more of a love story, but a real, true love story, because that song to this day, no matter where we are, if somebody starts playing Blue Moon, I think of her, and she thinks of me. So I hope you'll listen to the lyrics, or at least a few of the lyrics to a love song, and an announcer that still enjoys playing this music on the air with these romantic thoughts and these romantic feelings. Thank you so very much.
Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
One final question I always ask this. How many of you, and truthfully, with a show of hands, just want to, how many of you were expecting to see a much older looking person?